The way you get your news may have changed during this pandemic, but you still need to know what's going on in our state every day. IPR News has you covered. Subscribe to our new podcast, Here First, and start your day equipped with the essential local news you need to know, delivered in under 15 minutes, weekdays by 7 a.m. Get analysis from IPR's team of reporters. Learn about what's going on at the Statehouse and on the ground in your community. Subscribe to Here First today, wherever you get your podcasts.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. Historian Kevin Mason is going to be doing a lot of walking this summer. He will be retracing the 1835 route of the Iowa Dragoons up the Des Moines River so he can write a comparative environmental history of Iowa over the past 186 years. Mason is an assistant professor of history at Waldorf University in Forest City, and you can follow his progress this summer and learn more about the project at his website, notesoniowa.com. He is on the line with me now. Kevin, hello.
Hello, Charity.
And I think we need to start with a basic definition, because I used to drive from Sioux City to Ames quite a lot, and that would take me along part of the Dragoon Trail. And I always thought, what's a Dragoon? So let's start with that. What is a Dragoon?
So the Dragoons are kind of the forerunner to the United States Cavalry, founded around the time the expedition's actually going to happen. We're going to see the Dragoons organized in 1833 under the direction of Colonel Stephen W. Kearney. And he's actually going to end up in Iowa in 1835 with three companies, BH and I at 1st Fort Des Moines. So they're kind of mounted United States military personnel out largely charged with exploring, maintaining the frontier line. And part of that's removing settlers that are crossing established treaty lines. Other parts are some of the things like the Dragoons Expedition, where they're going to take specific routes in order to gain new information about territory the United States recently had acquired through different treaties or other negotiations.
And take us back in time to Iowa, the place that would become the state of Iowa in 1835. You mentioned frontier. Of course, this was not empty frontier land. There were many Native people living and traveling through the state of Iowa at that time. But tell me a little bit about this land then.
So in 1835, when the Dragoons arrive at what's commonly called Old Fort Des Moines or First Fort Des Moines, which is near Montrose, down in the very extreme southeast corner of the state, there's not a lot of American settlement here, as you noted. We're seeing large populations of the Sauk and Meskwaki, as well as the Dakota, which is the focus of a lot of my previous research and their presence in north and northwestern Iowa during the period preceding American colonization. And they're all living in this environment. By the time we get to the 1830s, we're starting to see the first kind of American formal inroads into the area with the treaties that are going to take place at Prairie du Chien, Wisconsin, at Fort Crawford in 1825 and 1830. So as those negotiations kind of unfolded, the United States is seeking to start to kind of enter into what would become Iowa a little further. The Dragoons specifically in the 1830s are following up what's commonly called the Black Hawk War. After that happens in 1832, there's what's called the Black Hawk Purchase, where the Dragoons' specific task in 1835 is to explore this Black Hawk Purchase as they go up the Des Moines River.
And tell me how you first encountered this journey that was taken in 1835. When did you first learn about it?
Well, so I grew up in the southeastern part of the state in Pella in Marion County, and my earliest memories of the Dragoons are similar to yours, maybe, where you see those signs kind of nestled along highways that are really distinct with the burgundy and black that have a picture of a Dragoon. It just says Dragoon Trail. And That was always something that interested me. I had a basic familiarity there down around the Lake Red Rock area. But then I think this kind of turned into a daydream during when I was working on my dissertation at Iowa State, thinking about how great it would be to get out into the field and really explore history firsthand by kind of retracing this route of the Dragoons. And as I came out of that process, and we've all been living through this kind of crazy year, I started to joke about it more and more. That's how my wife's been describing it. She says, I started to joke about this last fall, and then one day it was just a thing that was happening. And so we've kind of started to really plan out and chart out and starting to make this a reality. A month from today, we're going to get started.
Is she walking with you?
She's going to be, as in most aspects of my life, a constant source of support. We've charted out and broken the days into 4-mile segments where she's going to meet up with me consistently throughout the day. We'll still kind of doing some other things that she has in mind in some of these places we're going. One of the great parts about this is we're going to get to see Iowa, and we're both Iowans, in ways we never have before, and see it slowly in a way that I think will allow us to gain a new perspective, and then hopefully share those experiences with a variety of different people as we kind of make our way up over the course of May, June, and July.
And what is the full route? How many miles will you be walking altogether?
So the route I've put together is right around 320 miles. And I'm going to vary from the Dragoons a little bit, as well as from maybe the state highway that largely, or the state kind of formal route that moves largely from kind of the Fort Dodge area down to the Pella area. So I'm going to, in May, I'm going to be starting at Old Fort Des Moines near Montrose and going over to Farmington, up to like Lacey-Keosauqua State Park, and then up to Eldon through the Ottumwa area, and then eventually ending up at the Red Rock Dam near Pella. And then I'm going to take a break, pick things back up at Neil Smith National Wildlife Refuge near Prairie City, make the trek through Des Moines, up through ledges, eventually across where the Dragoons actually, they diverted and went northeast once they got to the mouth of the Boone River over to Winona's Village near Winona, Minnesota today, before eventually making their way back and coming down the Des Moines. But I'm going to keep pushing north up to Fort Dodge, to Dolliver Memorial State Park, where I'm then going to take another break and then come back and finish up and head up the West Fork, eventually ending up at Minnewaukan State Park in the Spirit Lake area, which is the focus of a lot of my previous research.
Well, and you've mentioned a lot of the parkland along the way. Of course, there's a lot of other land along the way as well that will not be even remotely like the land that the Dragoons encountered. What are you hoping to really see? I mean, you've talked about writing a comparative environmental history. The land in our parks is not the same as the land that has been developed.
So, yeah, one of the legacies, the things I think about a lot as an environmental historian is how much Iowa has really changed. We're all very familiar with the landscape we see today, fields of opportunity across the state in this really agricultural landscape we live in, where prior to the Dragoons expedition, when they were recording their notes, Iowa was a largely different prairie biome. There's some oak savanna. There's a wide-scale change that takes place over the rest of the 1800s and into the 1900s as we tile all sorts of lands in order to make them more suitable for agriculture. We see the disappearance and extirpation and extinction of different wildlife species. We see a lot of change happening. So one of the things I hope to see and encounter is how the notes and records left behind by the expedition contrast with what I'm seeing now. And some of that might have to do with land and wildlife, as I mentioned. Other things have to do with the Des Moines River itself. I think growing up in Pella, I was acutely aware of the town of Red Rock that's now submerged beneath the waters of the reservoir, where you think about the large damming projects at Lake Red Rock with the large hydroelectric dam that's there, or the Sailorville Dam in Des Moines, or even the series of projects that were abandoned that took place during the 1850s and 1860s in order to open the Des Moines River to steamboat navigation. All of those kind of things, and looking at how we can see almost a kind of a humanity versus nature story in the story of the Des Moines River, where there's been all of these attempts to kind of subjugate the river. But as we know, we still have wide-scale flooding issues with it every once in a while, if we think back to the historic floods that we've even had in the last couple of decades. Some of those are some of the things that I'm hoping to see as I make my way through and just kind of note those changes and then see what I can figure out at the end as I kind of finish things up in July.
Well, and one of the big problems that environmental historians face is that the people who first, or at least the settlers, the colonizers who first passed through the land weren't there to appreciate the nature. So they may not have recorded some of the many important things about the environment. Did the Dragoons leave you a lot of notes to work with to really understand what they saw and experienced in the Iowa landscape?
So boosterism is a rich part of our past, and I think we can trace that all the way back to Albert Lee. The year following the expedition is going to publish a little book. It's about 50 pages, notes on the Wisconsin Territory, particularly with reference to the Iowa District or Black Hawk Purchase. And throughout that, those 50 or so pages, he does do a lot of description of the land, soil, plant and animal life that's present throughout Iowa. But there's also a variety of other sources besides the settler accounts we might immediately think of. One of the things that I really have taken a lot of time to look at over the past 5 years or so are how we can use different records about Iowa's past outside of these kind of colonial sources to kind of open up a picture of what life was like before. So there's a variety of different ways to do that. Formal scientific methodologies like dendrochronology, which is a tree ring data that we can observe to learn things about the climate. There's also other kind of ways, things like in a previous project I worked on with the Dakota in Iowa, one of the things I wanted to see was how they ate. And so I took Samuel Pond's initial kind of work on the Dakota language, transferring it into English, and went through entry by entry and determined how many words there were involved with caloric intake or how people were feeding themselves. And I came away with over 100 different terms that helped me better understand how the Dakota used plant and animal life and what some of those things were available here prior to colonization. So I also take a look at a lot of different census records. I had a bunch of territorial and state and national census between 1836 and 1880, and those can really help unlock this with kind of lands that are being surveyed, lands that are marked either improved or unimproved, the number of livestock that are moving into areas, the agricultural receipts of crops that are being grown. All of those kind of things, I think, when combined together carefully, can really give us a picture of what Iowa looked like pre-colonization and then how it was changing over the course of the 1800s. And so there's a variety of different ways. Sometimes it's a little bit of a mess and takes some triangulation, but I guess it's what I really like to do.
Well, and you've obviously been giving this a lot of thought and maybe fantasizing about this walk a little bit over the last pandemic year. What do you think you will be able to see and experience doing this on foot that you wouldn't be able to see and experience in any other way?
So I think history by doing is really important. The idea that we all, if you're interested in history, usually interact with it in a few ways. Things like reading being the most common, but some people aren't readers. Maybe you watch some documentaries, and we have some great documentaries on Iowa's history, but maybe not unlocking these parts of the past. And I've thought about this a lot in the courses I teach. For instance, an example might be a few years ago, my wife and I went into our Waldorf Community Garden here on campus, and we grew a traditional Hidatsa Three Sisters style garden starting in the spring. And then when I opened my introductory United States history course in the fall of that year, we went out and instead of just talking about and lecturing about indigenous America and how people lived in this environment before colonization, we went out and as a class, we talked about these different agricultural strategies. We picked some corn and were able to really have kind of this concrete experience. So one of the things that I think is for me, it's always great to get out in nature. It's always great to get out into these sites of the historical past and experience these things kind of firsthand. I think that leads to greater empathy. I think it helps click things into your mind in different ways. And so I'm not trying to arrive at too many conclusions before I leave here as I work my way through all the research. I know I've got a good handle on what the Dragoon saw. I have a good idea of how the land's changing between their expedition in 1875 in particular when the Andreas Atlas came out. But then I'm also going to kind of let things meet me. And I plan for that to be collaborative, too. There's all sorts of opportunities on the website for people to participate in the forum. You can link in on Twitter or Facebook or YouTube or Instagram, all those different places where I hope to have some of these conversations. Because one thing I've learned in Iowa is that people really care about our shared past, and it can be a really collaborative thing. I think about different kind of community service things I do either with the Winnebago Historical Society or right on the park in Mason City, where I'm just constantly blown away that although I'm a historian professionally, a lot of other people have incredible insights and depth of knowledge because of their connection to these places. And I hope I'll encounter people like that along the way and have some of those conversations and then let kind of the conclusions find me. I don't like to set out with a conclusion before I start a project. So we'll see what kind of happens, which I know is maybe a weird way. But I'm hopeful that it'll be an interesting journey.
Are you also going to dress like a dragoon so you can really experience what it was like to wear the clothes that they would have worn while hiking this long distance?
Oh, I can find that relatable. My first job out of college, I worked at the Fort Abraham Lincoln Foundation up in Mandan, North Dakota, where Custer left for the Battle of Little Bighorn. And if I got the unlucky straw, I got to wear the old wool uniform like the 1800s military. I don't plan to break it out this summer. I think I'll be going a safety vest and hopefully a good pair of boots to make it.
Much smarter. It's a good idea. Kevin, thank you so much and best of luck. I hope that you'll check in with us on your journey and when you get it done.
Yeah, I appreciate you having me, Charity. Thank you.
Kevin Mason is an assistant professor of history at Waldorf University in Forest City. This summer, he will be retracing the 1835 route of the Iowa Dragoons up the Des Moines River so he can write a comparative environmental history of Iowa over the past 186 years. You can find out more about his project and journey at his website, notesoniowa.com. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe.